Okay, I guess that's better. Hi, my name's Eric Lyle. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date, September 18th, 1985. Talked to my sponsor tonight, so that's a good thing. Talked to a couple of my sponsees tonight, like three of them on the phone. And one of them's fairly new. He's got 61 days today of continuous sobriety. And he started his amends yesterday. So, you know, I'm going to go into a little bit about my experience sponsoring young men primarily. Don back there being the exception. When Don got placed in my life, I said, yeah, I'll sponsor you. And I'm driving home. I'm like, okay, God, what's up with the old dude? Because I usually, really, I usually end up with young guys. You know, but that's been a blessing and a wonderful relationship and developed into a close friendship. You know, and the guy that has got 61 days today, he actually gets up earlier than me, and that's really early because I get up 4:30, quarter to 5 at the latest, and I usually have a text from him, and it's his thoughts. It's basically looking at his previous day and his day to come. So it's kind of an 11th step in text telling me where he's at. And a couple of days ago, you know, he said, I can't thank you enough. And, you know, I responded to him briefly because I'm very brief in the morning with that kind of thing with text. And I said, we'll discuss this later, but you don't know how you've helped me these past 2 months. And that's something that we don't hear a lot about at times, but I can tell you that in the past 34 plus years, whenever life got weird, and generally not at my own hand, God, the universe, spirit, whatever your flavor may be, put somebody in my life that was new. And every one of those guys helped me through some tough times. Because left to my own devices, when stuff's not going well, I can become real dark and real selfish and fearful. But when you got a guy call you up and say, I can't stop drinking and doing some other things, and he's got a pretty powerful job, and you watch this downward spiral over the next 2 or 3 years as you're going through this life stuff, every time he'd call me and tell me how much worse it got, I thought, you know, what you're dealing with today just isn't that big a deal. This guy's got some problems, man. And the biggest one is that he's unwilling or unable to surrender to the solution. And his life's spiraling out of control, and he can't even see it because he's looking through those lenses that I looked through when I was getting loaded. You know, it's just nothing but delusion. So, you know, sponsorship's for the sponsor too. You know, and I'm gonna read a couple things out of the text, and then we're gonna talk about some of this. But to go through this process with a new guy is a humbling thing, you know, and the fifth step especially. And actually, you know, going through this guy's amends list and talking about the approach and that kind of thing is a very humbling thing for me. I mean, nobody wanted to spend any time with me when I was drinking at the end. And they certainly weren't asking me, how would you approach this, you know? that wasn't happening, okay? So, sponsorship's very humbling. It keeps me right-sized, you know? I mean, I got no special abilities to help somebody stay sober. I just carry the messages in this book and my experience working with a sponsor and living life sober. You know, and the other thing, especially these younger guys, and I should have started doing this longer ago than I did, but probably the last 10 years or so, when you read that chapter 7, working with others, I don't think they understand the historical perspective of what this was written. You know, so I explain it to them, because these are young guys. They're young, most of them are in their 20s. They're just like I was, and my sponsor explained it to me, and I just never thought to explain it to them that, you know, more than likely, the guy that's reading this book, or woman, doesn't live in New York or Akron or Cleveland or Baltimore, these cities where AA first had groups. He read the article in the magazine, or his wife did, and they sent $3 or whatever it was for a copy of this book, and it showed up in the mail. And the guy had to be desperate enough to read through this thing and do what it said. And those first 11 things, well, the first 9 must have been real tough. And he certainly had to have been desperate and willing to do that stuff, read it and do it. You might have had a minister or rabbi or your wife or a family member that kind of helped you through that, you know, along with 10 and 11. But when it came to work with others, there ain't no meeting in town. He's got to go find a drunk to work with if he believes what's in here, and they probably did if they got that far. So, you know, it talks about, you know, calling a minister, a priest, a doctor, whomever, to try to find an alcoholic to work with. Now, that's hard work, man, compared to what we got tonight. You know, all I got to do is walk into my home group and stick my hand out to a newcomer. And if they don't have a sponsor, offer to sponsor. That's what it tells us to do in here. It doesn't tell the newbie to go looking for a sponsor. It tells us, as sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous, to offer to sponsor them. That's what it tells us, no more, no less. So, and there's a couple things I may be a little soapboxish about tonight, but the urban myths in AA is what they are. And one of them is the newcomer has to go find a sponsor. That's not what this book says. It's my responsibility to offer to sponsor them. Period. There ain't no discussion about that. If somebody says anything other than that, it's not coming from this text. And I'm really adamant about that. But this guy had to go through a lot of stuff to find somebody to work with so he could stay sober. And the longer I'm sober, the more I appreciate that, because I got it easy today. I really do. You know, when it's time for a newbie, all I got to do is go to home group, man. There's always somebody walking in. Always. They may not be receptive to being sponsored, but I'm making that effort, you know. So I'm going to read a couple things, and then we're going to talk about some stuff, my experience with this. You know, this first chapter, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. And this next paragraph is about what's going to happen to me when I do this. Life will take on a new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends, this is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and each other is the bright spot of our lives. Then it goes on to talk about perhaps we're not acquainted with other drinkers, and it talks about a couple things I touched base on. But at the end of that paragraph, it says one thing: to be helpful is our only aim. We're to be useful to this drunk. And it talks about how to approach the new guy. And some of this is a bit dated, and I'm not going to go into that. But I do pretty much follow this guide. You know, obviously we're at a meeting, but I get together with him. I tell him about my story, what happened, how I started drinking, how I got sober, what was, you know, the consequence, and what was my bottom, what got me here, and what kept me here. And at some point in there, you know, we have to broach the subject of God. higher power, spirit, whatever you want to call it. And more often than not, there's not an issue with it. I've had a few guys that were very much like me, and I was able to share my experience with that too. That I didn't want it to be God. I wanted it to be anything but God. And that kept me really sick in AA for almost a year, and I darn near drank. You know, and that was all ego and false pride based, and I had talked about that during 2 and 3. And it says in here, you know, once you tell your story of how you drank, he's probably going to identify with that. He'll get that. I drank. He'll be thinking I drank the same way. You know, my sponsor did that with me. He wasn't that, but he was maybe 8 years older than me. So he's in his early 30s, but he partied the way I did. He got loaded the way I did at some of the same places I did. You know, I mean, let's face it, us alcoholics tend to gravitate to the same joints when we're out there, and it's not like they close their doors. We're what helps keep them open. If you are satisfied that he's a real alcoholic, begin to develop on a hopeless feature of the malady. And we do that. I talk about how it ended for me, how I tried. You know, I tried to not drink. I tried to think that me trying to be kind and loving to my parents and not show up at a holiday loaded, I tried to do that, but I couldn't. I couldn't stop drinking. I had good intentions, you know, but that obsession was more overpowering than any feelings I had for my folks or my wife or my in-laws. I drank, man, and I couldn't stop drinking. You know, stress the illness, the mental obsession and physical allergy, you know, that stuff that, in the doctor's opinion. Tell them exactly what happened to you and stress the spiritual feature freely. I've met very few guys that I worked with that were agnostic or atheist. I mean, most of them had a belief in some kind of power greater than them. It also tells us what to do if he's not interested in the solution. If he's looking for a bank or a job or whatever, you know, you may have to drop him until he changes his mind. If he thinks he's got another way to do this, by all means, say, you know, we don't have a lock on God. You know, I mean, I actually apprenticed under a guy that got sober in his church, and he was sober 25 years before he passed away, and he had a contented life. I mean, I stayed in touch with him after he retired. Stopped down and talked to him about some. I respected him enough that I stopped and talked to him about a job change I was going to make at one point after he retired. He stayed sober up till, I mean, he had remarried, and his wife was somewhat younger than him, and she let me know when he had passed away, and I went down and paid my respects. But he was a good guy, and he stayed sober through a spiritual solution. It just wasn't in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I truly believe that. I mean, that's just one example that was in my life. We don't have a lock on this thing, but this is what works for me, man. You know? Here's the one that always got me in the beginning. Do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. You are sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. To spend too much time in any one situation is to deny another alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy. And this is probably the question I've asked more often than any from the guys I work with that are starting to sponsor. At what point, when there's no willingness and no open-mindedness to a spiritual solution, do you move on? You know, I don't think there's a definitive answer, but I know for me, after 6-8 weeks, if they're not willing to start doing this thing and they're not open to a spiritual solution, I say, you know what, we don't have a lock on this, but this is what I know. And you're not doing the deal here, so I need to move on. And as tough as that sounds, it tells me that right here in this book. It doesn't give me a timeline, but I get a good feel for it. Now, I can tell you that the guy that called me in 1994 on the AA answering service and said, I got a problem with a woman. And I says, well, I don't know nothing about that, but if you can't stop getting loaded, I will pick you up Friday night. He says, well, I can't stop getting loaded either. For the next, 21 years, I sponsored this guy, and he never had more than, he had 3 years at the end of his life. He died sober, but he died as an indirect result of his alcoholism. I can tell you, I never told this to this guy, because he was always willing and open, but then he stopped going to meetings. And the next thing you know, he's drinking scotch and calling me from the peninsula saying, I'm reading the big book and I got a question. I mean, that's that guy. I talked to him about coming. But for 21 years, I never gave up on this guy because he was open to it. He'd get so far and then he'd stop. And then he'd disappear. And then he'd reappear. A little more beat up each time. But he was one of the ones that I was talking about earlier. My wife had gotten ill about that time. And for the next couple of years, I mean, life was pretty weird, and it was difficult. And I was raising this little girl and taking care of my wife, and she was trying to work and go through treatment for this pretty serious illness she had. And there were days when I was just really discouraged, and you know, and then he'd call, or we'd go to a meeting. I'm saying, and then I'm like, yeah. You know, cleaning up vomit in the bathroom from my wife's chemotherapy isn't so bad. This guy's got it tough, man. You know, it was one of those ones where I watched from the top to the bottom. You know, Tommy Carley was with us one night when we went to pick him up, me and my buddy Brian, and he'd went from having a really nice townhouse downtown to living in an efficiency at one of the motels out here on 12th Street. And Tommy says, Jimmy, how long you been here? He says, oh, about 12 years. Carly looks at him and says, now that's tenacity. That was Tom Carley. I love that guy. He was a beautiful man, and he stuck his hand out to me in the beginning to this young knucklehead and welcomed me to Alcoholics Anonymous. But, you know, he helped me stay sober and get through life. So, you know, but after a period of time, if they're not willing to do the deal, there's too many guys out there that need sponsors. I'm not going to continue to do that, man. When I become more vested in somebody's recovery than them, it's time for me to move on. And that's about everything I'm going to read out of the book, except what's so interesting to me in this chapter is they go in to talk about a bunch of different things, and one of them is being around booze. You know, after you've went through this and you're working with these newcomers, you know, we're going to talk about if you know if I can't be around alcohol at some point, I still have an alcoholic mind, and you know, there's no reason for Penny and I to keep booze in our house. But when our daughter's in town, she used to always ask first if she could bring a bottle of wine for her and her boyfriend. And I said, sure, you know, that's not an issue. And she still does ask, and she knows what we're going to tell her, because it's the problem's been removed. It's not an issue. I mean, I actually, she had us over for dinner when she was still in Erie, and she was making pasta, so I stopped at the Liberty Street State Store to get a bottle of white wine. And I drank with a two-aisle liquor store in Union City, okay? I walked into this place, it's like the Wegmans of booze. I'm like, oh my God. I looked around there, I'm like, you know, it took me 10 minutes just to find the white wine. Of course, I could have asked somebody and it would have taken me right to it. I wasn't going to do that. I'm a guy, you know. And, you know, over the years, you know, it's not like I go and hang out at the bar. I don't do that. But I have some friends that drink, and when we're fishing or, you know, at a social vet at their house or, you know, out with other friends that may drink, it's not an issue anymore for me. You know, I've been to a lot of concerts, you know, a lot of concerts sober, and you're just around stuff, and it's just never been an issue to me. But I wasn't comfortable with that until after I went through this process and been sober a few years. Remember, them first few concerts were weird, and I was always with a bunch of other AAs. You know, but that stuff's been removed. I mean, it's just not an issue. You know, but there's always that test. Do I have a reason to be there? Social, professional, whatever. And what am I going to bring to it? You know, what am I going to bring to it? Well, with my fishing buds, when we're out of town fishing, what I'm bringing to it is a designated driver. And maybe that's why I'm there, you know? I mean, they don't use me like that, but they have enough, they have sanity. When they've had more than a couple drinks, they throw me the keys and say, drive. And I'm happy to oblige them. You know, I don't want to have to be making that call to their wife. So, what I do with my guys, I mean, this is just what I do. You know, if they don't have a copy of the book, I buy them one. Somebody took me to task once at a big book meeting years ago because it says, lend them a copy of this book. Well, I've got to just kind of speculate that the reason why you lent them a copy of the book was because there weren't many books at the time when this was written. You know, it only makes sense. You may be the only person in the hamlet of 600 people that's got the book. So you can't really buy one unless you want to wait 2 weeks for it to show up in the mail. So make sure they get a book. I say, okay, you know, start at the preface and read through to 164. 2 weeks you got. I want you to call me every day. I'm going to ask questions. And you're probably not going to be able to answer them because you're still wacky. I mean, I couldn't remember very well, and I loved to read. That's the only thing that I like had when I showed up here, is I'd always been a reader, even when I was drinking. And I asked those questions, you know, and when they get to the end of the text, I say, okay, let's sit down and start reading back through it again. And that's what I do with them. Sometimes I have them read the preface and the forewords and the doctor's opinion. And we have a little question and answer about the doctor's opinion, because by this time they should have a little bit of retention, and they may ask some questions. And we go through each step, generally sitting down together. I'll have them read it and maybe write down a couple things about, like, the first step. There's two parts to that. Tell me what you think that's talking about. You know, invariably they get the first one kind of spot on. You know, as soon as I pick up a drink, it's over. You know, that mental obsession, that physical allergy. You know, the second part of that, the unmanageability, they're usually thinking about all that bad stuff that happened at the end of a run when they drank, you know, and that's not really what that's talking about. And that's how we go through each step. You know, 1, 2, 3, pretty quick, because there's, I mean, you know, unless they're balking at the God thing, and then it goes back to, okay, it's been 6 weeks, you know, do you believe in any power greater than you? And what my power greater than me was in the beginning was the consciousness of the group. That was the start of God consciousness for me, the energy of you people and your thought and just being in your presence. I mean, that certainly was a power greater than me. So, you know, 1, 2, and 3, and then we do the inventory. And I sit down with them. We read the directions. I draw the diagram on a legal pad. It says, if you want to make a four-column Excel sheet, have at it. But this is how you do it, and this is how you fill it in. And I talked about the four-step earlier. And that way it works, and it's a fact-finding mission. It works real quick, you know. And I tell them, if you spend more than 4 or 5 hours total actually writing this thing, you're not doing well, unless you have a whole lot of fears and a whole lot of resentments. But at 24 years old, you ain't been alive that long to have that many things. I mean, that was my experience, you know. I mean, I don't think I'm out of the ordinary, you know. And then we sit down and do the fifth step, and they do six and seven that day, and then we start writing their they've got their list. It's in the fourth step, you know. We go through that process, you know, and I can't tell you, you know, it's 8 weeks, it's 12 weeks, I can tell you the guy I'm working with now has got 61 days, and he's on his ninth step, and he's doing 10 and 11, you know, every day. And he's probably going to start sticking his hand out to a newcomer. You know, he's probably going to go back into the workforce here in the next month, and I suggested that maybe he get that settled and, you know, start working, and then go grab a wobbly, you know. And then, you know, we talk about 10-11, you know, we read it and talk about it, because let's face it, at least in my case, you know, it took some time to have that ninth step list completed. Well, I'm just not moving forward. You got to keep moving forward. So I'm doing 10 during the day, you know, is the best of my ability in 11, and that's what I encourage them to do, especially step 11, in that, you know, you got to start small generally. Some people, like my wife, have the burning bush religious experience, spiritual experience at rehab, you know, and their 11-step practice came very easy, and they were able to spend, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes in the beginning doing that. You know, that was not my, I mean, it was like 5 minutes in the beginning. But we got to start building on that, you know. And this guy does that, and he spends some time in the morning with it. You know, and eventually, when I think, you know what, it's time to go out and start doing this thing with other people, I say, you need to start sticking your hand out. And to ease him into it, I says, you know what, maybe go down to the one of the treatment centers where you're allowed to pick up clients and take them to meetings. Start hauling some guys to meetings. You know, kind of get that going on and see how it feels, you know. And then as your home group, start sticking out your hand. If there's somebody there that's new, give them your number and say, if you want a sponsor, come and see me. Eventually one of them is going to stick, you know. I mean, them first couple, 3-4 years, I only had a couple guys that I worked with. I mean, you know, and recently I had somebody ask me to work with him, and you know, I says, you know what, I just got a new guy, but I know this guy, he's got a couple of years, he's solid. I don't think he has a newbie right now. Why don't you go ask him, or I'll have him connect you. He's like, oh, no, I need somebody with more time. And I said, what do you mean? You know, that guy is as awake spiritually at this moment as I am. I can guarantee it. You know, he's worked through these steps. Now, he doesn't have the same experience I do of making decisions based on fear or self, you know, in 2 years that I have in 34 years. But beyond that, it's the same thing. You know, I think, you know, I just think we evolve as beings. But that guy, in fact, that guy's probably would be more beneficial to be working with a new guy than me at this point. I can't be selfish about this thing. I'm going to stay sober as long as I'm offering to help somebody through the steps and be useful to them in these rooms and doing 10 and 11. You know, and he's like, oh, no, I can't ask that person. And I'm like, well, I don't know what to tell you, but, you know, I don't have room for it. And for me, two new guys going through the steps is my max. I much prefer one. I mean, they deserve my attention. And two, between, you know, a job, and two newbies, and a job, and a house, and a wife, and all this stuff, that's a lot. You know, they deserve my attention, you know, brief call each day, and at least once a week getting together and doing some step work. You know, two would be juggling things. For me, now, I had 2 or 3 calls from guys I sponsored tonight, but they're brief. You know, I talked to one on the way over here. That guy's down the road some. He's just checking in, you know, talking about some life stuff. I mean, you know, he told me he's going to switch up his meetings and try to get it to a couple more meetings, but what we really talked about is pending wedding later this year, you know, and that kind of life stuff, you know. So that's how I do it, you know. That's how my sponsor did it with me. It's how he encouraged me to continue carrying the message. You know, in all this, you know, the message that's in this book is what we have to offer to newcomer. Every time I'm at a meeting and I hear this statement, I cringe, and sometimes it really makes me angry. And that is when somebody gets up here and sticks their finger at the points at the newcomer and says, all you got to do is not drink and go to meetings. That's a lie. If I could stop drinking, I wouldn't need meetings. I wouldn't need God, and I wouldn't need you people. In fact, I would go as far as to say, and this is my opinion, that's like handing them a gun and telling them to play Russian roulette. If they have alcoholism, they can't stop under their own power. If they believe what's in this book and what's the experience of me and many others, what we need to offer them is hope and a solution. That's in the book, you know. And the other thing about the newcomer, you know, it talks in working with others. We offer them friendship and fellowship. But it also talks in earlier steps, love and tolerance of others is our code. And in 2020, we have people showing up in Alcoholics Anonymous that may have problems other than. I really believe Wilson and Bob would not treat people that have problems other than alcoholism, and it would be better served maybe going to another fellowship the way I've seen people be treated. You know, in this day and age, I have enough knowledge about other 12-step programs, and I don't think there's a person in here that doesn't, that we can give them some loving suggestions and maybe steer them to a group that's better suited to serve them instead of treating them indignantly and kicking them out of an AA meeting. It's unconscionable. I tell you, Wilson and Bob Smith would have not done that. I mean, in fact, I believe at one time, you know, there was a junkie that showed up at one of the early meetings in New York City. What are we going to do with these guys? Well, here's a drunk, too. They helped get him sober, or attempted to, but they didn't treat him with indifference and indignity. And it really fires me up when this happens. I fully understand our tradition of singleness of purpose. But I don't think those two things are exclusive of one another. I think we can, you know, I don't ever want somebody to walk into AA and think they don't belong, okay? You know, and this is coming from the guy that come of age in the 70s. I did it all, and I did it all up to the end of my drinking, you know. The substance was not the problem. It was a symptom. But we need to treat newcomers that have other problems with other substances or even mental health and steer them to the people they need for their recovery and not make them feel less than. And like I said, that's my own opinion, but I got to believe that early on they wouldn't have been treated the way they are at times today. So with that, I'm going to... And I would certainly like to thank the group for the opportunity to do this. It's a very humbling experience. Very humbling. And, you know, I hope somebody gleaned a little bit of knowledge, something that would be useful to you in your recovery or in your sponsorship, you know. But it's nothing that's not in this book, you know. And I'm forever indebted to my sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. We've got some time for questions. Who wants to lead us off with a question for Eric?
That's what it is.
All right.
Turned to alcoholic. Eric, I really like the way you ended. I'm so glad that somebody else besides me thinks it's important to always make somebody welcome when they come in for help. But my question is, I've been told and taught over the years that 2 months is too soon to be making amends. Because. And I think it was because a lot of people have told me, you know, they could relapse, and then their amends would mean nothing to, like, their family. Could you explain your theory about why you think that would be appropriate? I know that's just an opinion, but I'm curious where you come from so I can have some more knowledge.
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I think that's a case-by-case basis. This is the earliest I ever had one of my guys. I mean, we were there. And there's some that he's not prepared to do right now. You know, I mean, this was an acquaintance, a friend of his, who's also the executive director of a program, and he sat down with him because he went through that program and he said, you know, I need to make this amends. He, you know, there's a couple of other ones that he's probably going to make in the next 2-3 weeks. There's some of this stuff that he's not going to be able to approach for a year or two. And even then, we're not quite certain he's not going to harm somebody in the process, so then you just got to live with those, okay? So it's really, you know, if the guy's kind of chugging along and we're at 9 and he's doing 10 and 11 and he's knocking out some of these, you know, maybe at 10 months that's where he's supposed to. I mean, I didn't make amends to my wife till we were 2 years sober, you know, but that was more advised. Those were the last ones. That was the last one. And it was to give us enough time to get slightly sober, you know, emotionally, and be able to make a sane judgment about whether or not we were going to stay married, you know, because that all had to kind of be addressed, and it was best to do it for us together, so.
Thank you.
You bet.
Who's next?
Thanks, Eric. You did a great job. I know that we appreciate it. Greg's got a couple of things that he'd like to give you, so as a thank you for the group. When you wrapped everything up and kind of summed up how you walked through somebody through the steps and stuff like that, do you how do you approach the traditions with the people that you sponsor? Do you take people through the traditions the way you take them through the steps, or
not quite at that same level? But we discuss all of them.
Okay.
Because some people don't like the tradition of self-support.
Correct.
That's the first one for me. You know, one of my boys show up and he's got a $3 energy drink, but he can't put any money in a basket. I'm like, dude, this is not right. You know, if you got $3 for that, you got a buck for the basket. And if you don't forego the drink and put the money in the basket, you know, our tradition of the primary purpose. You know what? I get what you were doing, because I was doing it. But somebody walks in and hears you talking about substance rather than recovery, because the substance really is irrelevant, then you may alienate that drunk. And it's not that you can't participate here, but be mindful of somebody else and quit being so consumed by self. I mean, I was the same way. You know, I had to have another fellowship's bid book. My sponsor made arrangements for me to get one because I thought it was different. And after about 6 months, but there really wasn't many meetings of that fellowship at that time in Erie, he's like, you do realize you're just trying to separate yourself and make it like you got more problems. And I'm like, yeah, that's probably the truth. And it was, you know. And I was going through this book, so that's the way I did that. But, you know, for me, there was some ego there. There was, you know, woe is me. I got more problems than you because I did this, all this other stuff too. You know, you only drank. That was just all BS for me. You know, so yeah, we talk about the traditions.
Anyone else?
Oh, good.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Thank you for your shares, the couple that I've heard, and for tonight especially. But the 12 the 12-step has a part about practicing these principles in all our affairs, and I was wondering how your recovery life, you know, has spilled out into other aspects of life that aren't in the rooms.
You know, I kind of glossed over that. I really didn't touch base on it. You know, the principles in all my affairs, we're talking, you know, when I'm out in public, I'm at work, I'm at home, I'm hanging with friends. Those principles of love and tolerance, I have to keep in the forefront. But how that comes about is with step 11 for me. And 10, you know, 10, 11 kind of play in with that too. Practicing the principles of humility and love and tolerance of others and trying to be useful, you know. I mean, and I shared last week or a couple weeks ago about the young lady at the hairstylist, you know, and this young lady was crying, and I, to make a long story short, she had had a terrible customer that just berated her, and I said, you know, we need to breathe here and slow down, and you deserve even better than that. You don't deserve to be treated that way, and we're going to do this thing, and I'm going to be very happy, and I'm going to pay you and give you a tip, and I hope you have a good day. That is practicing these principles in all affairs. Now, that's not something I consciously woke up that morning thinking about, but it happened as a result of somebody taking me through the book and live in 10 and 11. You know, all my affairs, you know, that cash register honesty was easy at the beginning. You know, there's some things I can be subtly dishonest about with myself, but I'm only messing with myself. And I'm talking about things that 10, 15 years sober, I would not thought I was being dishonest about. And I'm not talking work stuff or just stuff about how I'm feeling and maybe why I'm being a little angry or irritable, especially at home, you know. That's all those affairs. But yeah, you know, my experience has been working through those steps. That just is part of being, because 11 steps tells us to look at our day ahead. How can we be useful to others and bring, you know, the power of our higher power into these relationships? It really is about the relationship for me. Good point, though. I focused on the sponsorship part, not that. But yeah, there is, and my mistake for not even bringing that up. But thanks.
Thanks, Eric. Like Kevin said, the group's got some little tokens of our appreciation for